Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schankelberg, and Carl Carlson's on the line again. Hey, Carl.
Hi, Fred.
Hey. Now, we left off in our last episode on getting started, your career off to a good start. And we talked about a couple of different pieces there is more aimed at the junior reliability engineer. Now, realizing that some of our audience is probably not junior. And so let's move this discussion up to, let's say you've been a reliability engineer, say 5-10 years, kind of early, mid-career, I would say, right? It's the, you see it on job posting. So they say, we want an experienced engineer, 5+ years or 10 plus years, somebody that would fit that criteria. Learning the hard skills, learning soft skills, getting a mastery of the tools and techniques and working on teams, all those basics. Let's say they've got that. Now what? What do they need to do now?
Yeah, good question. I'm thinking two things that really kind of jump out at me on those on that topic on a mid-career basis. One is I'll characterize as internal to a company. The people that have excelled, that have worked in my group over the years, that have really excelled, have taken on some very tough problems. They've observed and saw some areas of reliability and quality that have been consistently difficult or consistently having causing problems within the company. Maybe certain product-related problems or certain process-related issues, and they've taken them on using their tools to make a breakthrough. And so they've done the work that they've been asked to do, but at the same time, they've been observant, and they've seen some areas that are tougher, that have eluded solution, and they've taken those on as personal tasks. They've asked to be more involved in those. And through their personal initiative, they've grabbed hold of those and have become known as the people that have solved those problems. So that's an internal one. And then externally, I think it's important to spend a certain amount of time each year presenting, writing papers, being involved in professional societies, to interact beyond the job that you have and even beyond the company that you're in to some degree, and to advance the overall reliability methodology in a professional sense. So I see an internal and an external aspect to that topic. What do you think, Fred?
Yeah, the difficult problem one is, I mean, that's opportunistic, and part of the is being aware of your surrounding and having enough mastery of your current thing, but always looking for where you can add value. So those problems that are more difficult also tend to be much more useful. And it may include setting up a better failure analysis process or routine within the organization, or breaking the mindset of wait till it fails before we fix it kind of thing, doing preventative maintenance type programs or preventative, more DFR type activities. The other part of that is looking for ways to expand your influence. So instead of working just within a project team, you may find opportunities more at the more senior level of looking at warranty policy, for example, or looking at positioning of the products from marketing point of view. Is just because it's not within your specific job description doesn't mean that those interactions with those other parts of the organization don't impact your product's reliability. They go hand in hand. So making connections in the finance department or in the sales and marketing group or in different roles and functions across the organization is a way, one, for you to learn and grow more in your as an engineer, but also to look for those opportunities where they just need a nudge of reliability engineering in their context of their role, such that it improves it overall in the organization. So those can be difficult and opportunistically provide a lot of value.
I agree. Ask yourself, if you're a listener, and Fred and I do this, I'm sure, ask yourself what your management is trying to solve. Look at things from the viewpoint of your management, your boss, your boss's boss, your other adjacent managers. What are the problems that are on their plate that give them headaches, that are difficult for them to face? Try to get inside their point of view, and then use your skills, your talent, your energy to help them solve those problems using the methods of reliability and quality. And like Fred says, you can go outside your own exact job description, but nothing advances a career more. And I don't mean just buttering people up. I certainly don't mean that. I'm not talking about what we used to call brown nosing or other types of ways to characterize it. I'm talking about genuine value. What are the problems that sit on their desk that they have trouble with? Help them solve those problems. That is a great career advancer.
I think you know you're getting good at it when you get phone calls and requests as the reliability expert or as the reliability engineer. At one time at HP, I got a call from a group that managed the databases that carried all of the financial data for the corporation. And they were looking at the information flow through the various databases in their system. And they asked me to attend. And I'm like, what? I don't know anything about databases. And so they said, they talked my boss into having me come to their meeting for half a day. And I learned a lot about their language and what kind of issues they're dealing with. And I asked a couple of questions. And at the break, I asked the host, I said, you know, I'm not really sure why I'm here. Am I getting in the way or anything? And she said, you asked two questions today that nobody in the room could think of how to phrase it or how to ask that question. They couldn't even see that it was a question. And you reset our mindset about how we're solving these problems. And she said, you reliability types just look at the world a different way. And coming through your filter, through your lens, helps us understand our project, our process.
Very good.
And I'm like, wow, I had no idea. So part of it is, you know, within the organization, it's remember that reliability is not just derating a capacitor or running a test. I don't agree with you, Carl, that it's looking at what your manager's problems are trying to solve. I think that's one venue, but I think much more importantly is what are your customers trying to solve?
Yeah, very good.
What's their problems? What are they dealing with? You know, is it an expectation that this product has a reliability that's not being translated correctly in the organization? So in the initial concept phase, can you get influence there? Can you solve that problem so that your products actually do meet your customers' expectations?
Excellent. I like where you took that, Fred, to take it right to the customer and what are their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good.
So there's lots of opportunities there. And from a reliability point of view, now externally, and I think it's even internally that this applies, is the sharing the reliability knowledge that we have. And it does two things. One is it provides back to the community of practice in our field of reliability engineering. A great way to learn something is to write about it or present on it at a conference. It makes you really focus and get a deeper understanding of it. So it's going deep on particular topics. The other piece is that as you take on these more difficult projects or you take on areas that you definitely need to learn on, you may inadvertently become or deliberately become the expert, air quotes here, right? And it's a way to build credibility within your organization is, you know, you do a couple of weeks work on, say, ceramic capacitors and solve a problem that was leading to cracking of those capacitors and failing circuit boards. We'll publish that. Do a webinar within the company. Do a brown bag presentation about what you found and what and how to detect cracked capacitors and what to do about it when you find it. Provide a solution and share that knowledge internally if it's proprietary and externally if you can. Is it helps your brand, is the lack of a better word, as an engineer. And again, you know you're becoming successful when people call you from other parts of the organization or from other industries even to say, hey, can you help us with this? Or do you know what's the best approach? Or can you get involved in this team?
Let's build on that phone call that you get or that email or the instant message from someplace that says, can you help us in this area? And let's say, for example, Fred, it's not an area that you are an expert in. And so some people might say no to that. Mm-hmm. Other people might say yes, and then they go to work in the evenings to shore up their knowledge. Mm-hmm. In other words, they take that opportunity. Let's say someone called from the warranty organization and will, in this example, say, you or I are not experts in warranty. And they say, can you help me do an analysis of this warranty project? Well, those are doors that are opening. And I would encourage people to answer in the affirmative that you can help and then improve your knowledge or if you have to collaborate with others to bring it together. But try to help people, even if it moves out of your comfort zone. We are blessed with so many resources now, as you pointed out, Fred. It's not just a matter of going to the library now. You can do a lot of research at your home in the evening online. And then you can apply the basics of reliability to areas that you're not as familiar with and then be able to help people and gain that reputation that you are a helper, a doer, somebody that is on the team. I think that's part of career advancement.
That is. I really – and that's not different than what we recommended a junior engineer to do. It's just that what you bring to the table is that experience and a finer set of tools, basically. And that's where you start picking up what your expertise is going to be in. So for me, it was accelerated testing. I started with that. I looked for projects like that, and I kept improving my skill set in designing and analyzing, running and analyzing accelerated life tests. And so that it's become part of my resume, basically. This is an area that I have a depth of expertise in. And I wrote and focused on and started teaching a class in engineering management. So it was another depth of a field for me. Now I know statistical process control. I know lots of other, you know, FMEA and HALT and tons of other tools that we use. Mm-hmm. Yet I don't know that anybody can be a master in all of those. And we mentioned it as a junior engineer is look for those areas that you are excited about and you want to know more and more about it and it adds value to your organization, actually is useful, that may become part of your depth of an area. And so that continues in mid-level.
I agree. The mid-level, you get deeper in your the core skills. So if you have that expertise, if it's in accelerated testing or it's in design of experiments or whatever it is, then you build on it, you become more and more expert, you become the go-to person for it, but you also broaden out so that you're constantly balancing with the awareness of the full set of tools. I'd like to add one more thing to the mid-level career, which is I think it's important, of course this applies to beginning as well, but especially at the middle range, I think it's important each year. And this is a good, you know, we're in a podcast that is moving into the new year. I think it's important to write down your goals for the next year, write down specific targets, things you would like to do. So putting it in writing helps to get it outside of your head and to think about how you can achieve it. I've had great success over the years with some authors like Stephen Covey and Lou Tice and others that that help in terms of becoming the best you can be by affirmation. Here's the way I want to be, mm-hmm, and here's mm-hmm. what I want to do. Putting it out there as things that in terms of actionable, doable steps. Get good at writing plans, so your own personal career plan. I have a son that I was talking with over the weekend that was having some trouble in his next step in his career. So I said, let's write down some targets. What do you need to achieve? What do you need to do to achieve that specific, doable, executable targets? And that's very helpful mm-hmm, to him. Mm-hmm, so I think it's always good to have some goals in writing and a career plan and some actionable steps to have in front of you to keep you moving in the right direction.
Now, would you put out, you mentioned like yearly goals. Would you also keep in mind where you want to go with your career? Is this an appropriate time frame? Somebody that's been in reliability 5 to 10 years to, you know, to say they want to be a consultant or they want to be a senior technical contributor or they want to be a manager. Is that
yes.
about where it starts taking shape, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think that is important. In fact, I was making a little note to myself while we were talking that let's ask the question, is it best to have one skill or one role and then keep that same role for your entire career? Or is it best to have different roles, maybe 2 years at one type of reliability or in another couple of years at another type of reliability or part of your career in engineering and part of your career in management. So
the dark side.
Really, yeah, exactly. So what's the best way to go?
You know, I think that's a personal question. I think each person will have to answer that for themselves. I know some corporations, I think Procter & Gamble and GE did this also, is they would rotate junior engineers into different roles and different positions.
General Motors did the same thing.
Yeah. And it would be kind of as an idea of looking at giving the engineer and future manager a broader view of the organization. And it's looking for the talent that they're going to promote into more senior levels and grooming their talent, basically. But it also cross-fertilizes information from one part of the organization to another and hopefully takes the best practices and leaves the poor ones behind. And that's met with various levels of success. But it's also on the individual is look for those opportunities of, you know, and I read it somewhere, and this was years and years ago, is like Carl, our parents basically had one career. They would start with a company and generally work that their whole life. Whereas our generation, the kind of the cups at the end of the baby boomer generation, we were expected to have 3 to 5 careers, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think millennials are expected to have 10 to 20. Yeah. You know, and it's more of the gig economy where you work for a couple of years on something, then move to something completely different.
There's a couple aspects to that. Let me build on that, Fred. There's the skill that you have, the thing you're really good at, and then applying it at one company. And then after a few years, you go to another company and you apply that skill you're really good at the next company. And then after a few years, you go to another company. There's a career advancement, and it does work for some people to move through different companies as advancements become opportunities open up in different companies. You can also move within a company. Let's say you're in a large company like General Electric or General Motors, or and you can do a few years of testing, reliability testing. You could move into become a design engineer for a few years. You could move into quality for a few years. In other words, you can rotate through different assignments and then move into where you want to be on the longer term. Mm-hmm. But you have that wider background that I really do think helps. And at some point, you have to decide, if you're at the mid range of a career, you have to decide, am I going to be a technical expert for the rest of my life, or am I going to move into that the M word of and learn to direct or coach or develop or supervise other people to accomplish that objective?
You know, and I've seen many good engineers succumb to management in all of its glory. Others excel at it. They're not particularly brilliant engineers, but they're really masterful leaders, not managers, but leaders. And I've seen people go back and forth that bridge the gap, and they spend 3-4 years in a technical role, and they go into management for a few years and then back. And I don't think there's a right answer. And the same with in the company or moving between companies. They all can create a successful career. It's a matter of in each application, how you provide value, how you make a difference that makes the world a better place, in so many words.
I completely agree. There's no one size fits all. There's no one answer. I think that if a person is stretching themselves, constantly pushing themselves into areas that expand their scope, and all the time adding value, that's the path. Whether you're staying in one job description or whether you're moving from job to job or company to company, if you're stretching yourself and adding value, then I think it's going to work.
That's right. And it's not so much, you know, trying to build an impressive resume. I think that comes with if you do well in each position you're in. And,
yes.
And doing well in a position generally opens more opportunities. So the focus is really do a good job of what your tasks are in front of you and look for opportunities to add more value in any stage of your career. Mid-level, though, it starts to look at, you know, I've been doing reliability predictions. And that's all I've ever been doing. There's more to the world. And I would get bored doing the same thing. So I think that just led to me moving to different opportunities. Naturally, but I think it's a self-assessment. So setting down and writing those goals is a way, one of the steps is, well, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? Where can I add the most value? Plus an assessment of what you've been doing. And so it's a good opportunity. And I agree, Carl, is writing them down does something different than just thinking about it. It has an effect of actually making it happen.
I'll add one brief comment, and we may have touched on this, but I think it's important, for particularly at the middle range of a career, is to participate and volunteer in professional societies, at least one, like Society of Automotive Engineers or American Society of Quality or Society of Reliability Engineers. Do more than just join and have the sticker on the wall. Participate, help them out in some way. Don't do it necessarily for selfish reasons. Do it to advance the subject of the subject of reliability, because I think that carries you forward by evolving yourself that way.
Well, one last note as we're running into it. I think the idea of participating in societies and organizations and forums and discussion groups and helping others is a good piece of advice. One of the benefits of it, though, is it builds a network. You get to have a set of peers that you know, like, and trust, and you can ask questions of. You can help them answer their problems or solve their problems, and you are much more powerful as a community than it is an individual. So networking is something we missed in the junior one, but I think in mid-career it becomes even more pronounced as a necessity in order to advance your career is build a strong working network.
And we're fortunate to have good online tools like LinkedIn and others that help build that network. But yes, having a good network of peers and colleagues where you're benefiting from their support and you're also supporting them, kind of a balance on the flow. I agree, that's really a central part of career advancement.
Yeah, a lot of the same things we talked about for the getting started is hone your skills, all those professional development things. But now it's a little bit more refined and a couple more add-ons there. So I'm sure there's other pieces to this, Carl, we may have missed. We're kind of looking at 20 minutes or so. It's a topic that we probably should do a whole webinar on or some other, expand it out a little bit more. So I'm going to open it up to the listeners. What do you think? What pieces of advice would you give somebody that is 5 to 10 years into their reliability engineering career? And we mentioned a couple of different things, Carl, but I'm sure there's some pieces out there we may have overlooked or missed. The other question for the listeners is, would you like to hear some more about this? Does this topic intrigue you, or should we put together a bit more formal piece on this and do a webinar or some other type of activity? And or maybe a workshop. We could do an online workshop or something like that.
That's a great idea.
And see where that goes. So let us know if you're interested. That'd be great. If not, we have another episode coming up in a couple of days. So stick with us for that. I know one question that came in my mind, Carl, I had this question a couple of years ago from somebody who says, well, I want to be a consultant. I'm like, okay. This is what, and then we talked a bit about what they were interested in, what they could do, what kind of skill set they have. But we quickly came up with, well, here's the 8 or 9 things you really need to start doing now in order to set a foundation for that.
Yes.
To make that happen. So that could be another direction we could take this discussion.
It is another direction. It's a whole different set of skills.
That's right. So we'll leave that one for another time. We'll add it to our list. But if you're particularly interested as a listener in these topics, let us know. Carl and I seem to fill an episode very quickly on these topics. And if there's some other topic or something you'd much rather hear about, let us know. We're always looking for suggestions and feedback, and we much appreciate that. You can find the episodes and comment and suggestion box over at reliability.fm, and we look forward to hearing from you. So with that, Carl, let's get back to working on our careers.
Very good.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.